I'm going to tell you that this technology that we use every day is more of a part of our life than we realize. And maybe we have this kind of love-hate relationship with it. But functionally speaking, we want things to happen fast. We want data at our fingertips. We don't want to wait for it. We've become impatient in this whole process of how we use data. Our doctors use data. Our mechanics at the auto body shop are using data. The way we shop and buy things, it's all driven by data, and it has to happen quickly. Guess what? All that means we need the infrastructure in place that supports our thirst for data and for speed. And so we're going to talk about data centers today. And this is really a conversation about us and how we participate in commerce and the way we use information. I am honored to have Charlie Baker here today with Quantica Infrastructure. He's a Montana native and chief accounting officer today. He's joining us on Voices of Montana. How technology has us a little bit nervous nowadays, but we still use it. It's still absolutely a very much a part of our lives. It's in our smartphones. It helps drive our business. It helps. We use it as a tool in how we participate in commerce. It's this thing. And in order to make that work, we need the infrastructure that supports really our participation in data, fast data technology. I know there's been a lot of conversation out there about data centers. There's global conversation actually about data centers. We're going to unpack that a little bit, but let's stay local. Let's stay Montana first before we go global. It is a global issue, but it is an issue in the United States. It's an issue in our own communities. Joining us today is Charlie Baker with Quantica Infrastructure, Chief Accounting Officer. Charlie, welcome to Voices of Montana.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you. I'm excited to be here to talk about the project today. So yeah, it's an exciting time.
We appreciate it. We know you guys were on before, but I was doing a little reading and I heard there were some updates, maybe some more information. Maybe there's some questions floating out there that you want to address. And so we appreciate you coming. Would you get us started today, Charlie, by just giving our audience a little bit of your background? As I did a little more homework, we've had the opportunity to bump elbows in the past because you've been very involved in the development of energy in Montana. Give our audience, though, a little bit of your background.
Sure. Happy to, Steve. So thank you for that intro. Yeah, I spent about 15 years with PPL Montana, Talon Energy. They owned some coal power plants around the state, some hydro facilities. So I've got a deep generation background. As you said, I'm a Montana native, born and raised, fourth generation, been here a long time, and super excited to be working on this project. A big part of a data center development is energy, right? They consume a lot of energy,
yep,
and I'm sure we're going to get into that more today. But, you know, so I think myself and some of the other team members on our executive group both have a deep experience in the energy industry here in Montana.
Well, Charlie, thank you for that background. To get us all on the same page, give us a description of the scope of the projects. And are we're talking two projects? You have a project here in Yellowstone County, a project you're involved in, I think, also in the Butte area. Give us a little bit of a flavor of what's the scope of those projects.
Yeah, sure. Happy to, Steve. Just one correction. We're not involved in the project in Butte. That's another developer. So Quantica Infrastructure has the Big Sky Digital Infrastructure Project here in Yellowstone County, so near Broadview. It's a 1,000-megawatt data center campus with energy supporting that. And we've talked about the renewable energy that we would be building, wind, solar, and battery, as well as firming resources, because as you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time and the sun doesn't shine all the time. So we've got to have something to firm that resource up. So our first project is the Big Sky Digital Infrastructure Project, as I mentioned, here in Yellowstone County, and it's a 1,000-megawatt data center campus.
Acreage, campus footprint.
We own 5,000 acres today near the substation in Broadview. We have about 40,000 acres under lease with local landowners for the development of the renewable energy side of the project to support the data center. We have talked a lot about paying our own way in this process. I mean, one of the concerns out there that you hear is it's going to raise my electric prices. Well, We plan to bring all the generation that the data center is going to need, so we don't believe that this will affect ratepayers at all. I'm a Northwestern Energy customer, and I don't want my rates to go up. So, you know, we are building the generation to support the data center.
I want to talk more about that,
sure,
that kind of pay our own way approach. That's really important. That's really important to all of us in Montana, that large load users come in and are able to provide their own resources. So, especially at a residential or small business level, we're not getting impacted by that. I want to talk, though. I was teasing at the beginning that we're all driving this issue with the technology that we use every day in our lives, and really every aspect of our lives. We're part of what's driving this, but give us a better sense of what's really the need. What are we trying to accomplish with your data center project or other data center projects? What's the demand look like?
Yeah, the demand is significant. You know, data centers have been around for a long time, right?
Yep. We have some in Yellowstone County right now.
Absolutely. And so they've been around for a long time. I think you've seen its exponential growth because of AI, right? There's a need for more data and more compute power in the country because of the AI usage and the amount of compute power AI needs to learn and then to process that is significant. So that's driving the huge growth you're seeing across this country in data centers is the AI development and revolution.
So as the audience might know, you know, Charlie, that I spent over 16 years in Montana in the economic development world. And I remember there was a time a decade or more ago that data center projects were kind of an important piece of infrastructure and private investment we wanted to see in a community. It was a good private investment. It generated a tax base. And it was something that I even know my colleagues in economic development across the country were like, hey, we're working on data center development as an economic development tool, job creation tool, attracting new private investment. Something's kind of turned. What in the last couple of years, people are, time out. What's driving that reconsideration? Because to be honest, data center development in your county does really add new tax base to the county, which benefits all of us. There are jobs that are being created, which have value. There's some externalities to that I think people have questions and concerns about that maybe didn't exist before. So what are those kind of, why are we approaching this differently today than maybe we did just a few years ago?
That's a good question, Steve. I think there's a few things that I would comment there on. I mean, I think you've seen an exponential growth in the development of a data center. So I think that you're seeing more of it out there. And there are legitimate concerns being raised by folks, and things need to be done responsibly in development. I mean, people do not want their power prices to go up. They don't want us to consume all the water. You know, they want to make sure there's tax base created and jobs created from this. So, I mean, there are legitimate concerns out there as a developer, we need to address those and try to develop this project responsibly. But I think some of the concern is, as we were talking before the show, is there's a fear of AI by some folks, and that is driving some of the concerns on these data centers, I think, Steve.
Yeah, we were having a discussion in studio before we came on the air, and I think Cody was concerned that AI is going to replace him, and we're all concerned that we're going to get, we were talking about a commencement exercise at the University of Wyoming that Jonna was at, and the speaker was talking about AI and the students booed. And so we're all kind of getting this, we've been loving technology and now we're at the point like, whoa, slow down, time out. What does this mean to me personally? I'm using it every day. Every single one of those students at the University of Wyoming graduation, they're using that technology today. But now there's this kind of pushback. And it's, wait a minute, I see this potentially impacting me on a personal level, on a job level, on a community level. I've got more questions. I need more answers. I need to understand that there's sideboards there to this. And you're not developing, you're developing the infrastructure that supports AI. Yeah. but you're not programming it. You're not plugging in AI. You're not installing that technology into search engines. You're just creating infrastructure for that. So I want to separate this dialogue a little bit from that mystique that's out there about AI. One thing in the materials that I've been looking at, you say you're going to pay your own way approach.
Yes.
Be really specific, Charlie. And what does that mean?
It means we will pay any costs associated with building the data center. So I've talked about building our generation that would support the data center campus. We will pay for that. Any upgrades that are necessary from a transmission or substation perspective to get the power to the data center, we will also pay. I think the good thing about our project, Steve, is I talked about the 5,000 acres that we own near the Broadview substation, which is one of the largest substations in the state. Coal strip comes through there and goes to the West Coast. There's four major transmission lines running into there. But the 5,000 acres that we own, the 40,000 acres that I talked about under lease are adjacent to that or in a similar area. So we don't think there's significant transmission needs to get the power to the data center campus. So we're co-locating the generation with the data center, essentially.
So obviously you're investing in the infrastructure of the data center itself, all of that, the buildings, equipment, etc. You need power to run that, and you're investing in the power components that provide the power that you need. And then that power just doesn't float through the air and land at your that. It's got to go through, and you're going to invest in any upgrades of the transmission system to get power to your facility.
That's exactly right, Steve.
Okay. I also want to, and when we come back, we're going to take a break here in a minute or two, but I want to talk about water because there are people that are concerned about, well, wait a minute, large data centers, got to keep them cool. That is an issue in the operation of data centers, I know, and there are systems designed to do that. Are they going to be using water, large quantities of water? How will that impact water supply? We will talk about that. But quickly, what's the role of our Montana Public Service Commission in this project?
Yeah, good question, Steve. I think the Public Service Commission regulates Northwestern Energy, who is the utility, the major utility in the state. So the structure that we're pursuing is we would build the generation, sell it to Northwestern, and then Northwestern would sell that to the data center customer. So we are not building the data center itself. We're building the infrastructure associated with that. There would be a third-party data center owner, you know, a large tech company that would step in and build and construct the data center and own the data center. We're building the infrastructure to facilitate that build.
Quick question, if I'm understanding how those work. So the final owner then of the data center, will they equally be committed to the promises that you're making on the development of the project?
Yes, they will be.
Because as those contracts fly around, you're going to have a contract with them as they take over. If you've made promises to the community, to the Public Service Commission, to Northwestern Energy, those don't evaporate.
No.
Those go with the project, regardless of the owner.
That's exactly right. And we're having discussions with the customer today, and that is exactly what we're talking about. We're setting up the contracts and the infrastructure to support that data center, and they will step into that. So they are also on board with pay your own way approach, Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. I really appreciate that. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the water piece of pay your own way. What does that look like? I want to talk to you. What is the term minimal for industrial standards look like when it relates to water use at your facility? I need to define that for us. Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. I'm Steve Arviscow, your guest host. Today, we are joined in studio by Charlie Baker, the Chief Accounting Officer for Quantica Infrastructure. Charlie, welcome again to Voices of Montana. Thank you for answering questions about the project that's looming out there. Hey, if you've got a question for Charlie, happy to take those questions. That number is 866-627-5483. Or if you want to just text in your question, which some of you have, 781 627-5483. Cody, did I get those numbers correct? Don't want to mislead the community out there and have them chasing a number somewhere else. Charlie, when we were going heading into break, I wanted to talk a little bit more about pay our own way, but specifically on the water side. You described very well, I think, your commitment to the infrastructure necessary to provide power, and that will be a cost that is borne by the project, yep. You as the developers of the project. There are concerns. You know how precious water is in Montana, and this year in particular, we need every single drop that we can. So people legitimately have questions about how are they cooling this? Where's the water coming from? So talk to us a little bit about your water plan. What's the source, use? In your material, you describe your plan to be a minimal, your water plan to be minimal for industrial standards. Boy, help us understand what that means.
Yeah, sure, Steve. Thank you for that question. So we understand water is a big concern and a legitimate concern that folks are raising. I mean, I'm, like I said earlier, I'm a Montana native. I know how important water yep. is to everyone around this state. And in the drought year that we're having this year, it's even more particularly important. So from a water perspective, we don't have the final design of the data center campus yet. We're still working on the design and the customer. So those things are still in flight today. So we can't tell you specifically we're going to use X number of gallons of water every day. What I can tell you is the customer that we're talking to is looking at a closed loop cooling system. So they're the old school data centers were evaporative cooling where they ran right. it through the system and evaporated all of the heat through a cooling tower. And that's not the design being built today. All of the data centers today are being built with a closed loop cooling system where water or other liquids are circulated through the system time and time again and reused, like your car's radiator, Steve. So that's the easiest way to describe that. So we're not going to be using water for cooling for this project. It's a closed loop system. So all we're going to be using is water for domestic purposes, toilets, kitchens, bathroom sinks, those sorts of things.
And that's so, driven really by the operation itself, how many people are employed
that's right.
there. And what, give me those numbers again. How many people would be employed in this operation? We can get a sense of the scale that way.
Yeah, it's a good question, Steve. And we don't have precise numbers on jobs today. As I said, we're still designing the campus and what that will look like and whether there'll be one building or two buildings or what have you. We don't know that yet. So, you know, it's thousands of construction jobs probably and hundreds of jobs when the data center is up and running from support staff. You're going to have IT staff, electricians, HVAC people. So good paying, skilled jobs for the state of Montana.
So just to put it in context, I guess I'm thinking of a recent project in the area, Coca-Cola bottling facility, created 100 plus jobs. They obviously use water in their right. process. And so that's maybe a similar scale, although they're using water for their product. You will not be. You're just right. using it to accommodate the needs of the employees on site. I think what would be helpful, Charlie, is as you finalize the design, and I know you're working that out with your future customer, yeah. right? Because you need to know what their needs are. That when that design really is fleshed out, then you'll be able to answer more precisely, right? Questions yep. about exactly how much water, what's the source of your water, groundwater, where's that? Where are you tapping into the water system for that facility? Has that been determined?
We're still exploring that, Steve. So there's no water close proximity, no rivers or anything to our sites. So we're exploring wells to do the domestic water that we talked about. I think some of our opponents have said we're going to use 10 million gallons of water every day. Well, that is just not true. There's water doesn't exist there. And that's an old school evaporative cooling system. It's not a closed loop system. Oh, I think we're okay. talking hundreds of thousands of gallons a day, not millions of gallons a day, Steve.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate that. And I think as the project design comes on board, providing additional clarity, really important for people
Absolutely.
who have legitimate concerns.
Yep.
We got a question that was texted into us. It was really, and I'll summarize it by saying they just don't feel that they're going to be able to avoid a rate hike as a consumer because somehow Northwestern Energy is going to find a way to apply some of the cost of what's going on here to them. And I've done a little bit of homework, but you're here today, Charlie, to help inform me and then help inform the audience. Northwestern Energy has proposed what they call their large new load tariff rule as a tool to put safeguards around, actually safeguards on behalf of the consumer of regular Northwestern Power Energy. So when Cody and I turn the lights on in our house, they want to put a buffer around these types of projects so that Cody and I aren't paying any extra as a result of your project. Can you give us a little bit more information about the large new load tariff rule and then maybe where it stands in the process with the Public Service Commission?
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So you're exactly right. The large load tariff that Northwestern has filed is designed exactly to do that. It's, as you said, it's to protect the consumer so that, you know, our project doesn't impact the residential customer rates. So any load, and I don't remember the specifics exactly, Steve, I think any load over 20 megawatts has to go under that large load tariff and would go in front of the PSC for their approval. So they have the oversight to monitor Northwestern to ensure no harm to residential customers. So that's really what the intent of that rule is, and we 100% support that. Again, I'm going to repeat this a bunch today. We are committed to pay our own way on this project. So we do not want residential customers to foot the bill for a large data center. These tech companies need to pay for that.
I know the Public Service Commission is a little preoccupied right now with this whole merger discussion, which adds a little additional layer on this whole discussion with Northwestern Energy. Not going to get into the merger discussion. Maybe that's a dialogue for another day. When will the Public Service Commission respond to the proposed tariff rule? Where is it in process?
Yeah, I think, Steve, that it's been filed with the Public Service Commission. I don't think they've proceeded on a hearing with that yet. As you said, they've been busy this week and last week with proceedings. So I don't think that they've taken up that large load tariff rate at this point in time. So that's still on their docket to do. At some point, they will have a hearing and a process to review that. I don't know the specifics of that. Again, that's a Northwestern process that they're running, and we're not necessarily involved in that. I mean, we support the idea, but we're not regulated by the Public Service Commission. Northwestern is. So I think what I've heard, Steve, is that it's probably a year process before they get that large load tariff through the PSC.
And based on the process that is used by our Public Service Commission, people have an opportunity to come and testify. Obviously, they're going to be looking at it in the context of, oh, we've got these data center projects. It's not a discussion about a particular data center project. It's about creating a set of boundaries around how Northwestern Energy would respond to projects like this in the future. So whenever that comes up, folks will have an opportunity to testify before the Public Service Commission. Well, good morning again, everyone. I am not Tom Schultz. I am Steve Arviscow, guest host, but I think Tom will be in tomorrow. That's the plan. You're going to get to hear his voice and communicate with him on Voices of Montana coming right up. Today, I have the privilege of talking to Charlie Baker with Big Sky Digital Infrastructure Project. And Charlie, when we were in the break, we got a few questions. And so I've got questions on my list. We want to dive in a little more detail, but I'd love to be able to jump on the phones and grab Bill from East Helena. Bill, would you ask your question of Charlie? Good morning, Bill.
Yeah. Good morning. I was wondering if you ever considered those packaged nuclear plants as far as for power sucking dry everything from coal strip.
Hey, Bill, thanks for the call and the question this morning. Appreciate that. Yeah, as I said earlier, we plan to develop a lot of our own generation, renewable generation, and some firming capacity. We're currently not looking at small modular reactors from a nuclear perspective. I think from a from a design standpoint and state standpoint, those are not ready to go yet. It's something that we may look at in the future, but currently no plans to look at nuclear. But we are developing our own generation near the site, and we won't be taking that directly from Colstrip or sucking up the grid, as you suggested.
Bill, thank you. I appreciate that question. We also got a few text messages, and Charlie, one of the questions that is coming through text to us is noise level. Let's talk about that. We talked about rates and impact that might be there and how you're addressing that, kind of pay your own way. We talked a little bit about water. You got some design work yet to do to have some clarity around that, which is important. I think the more clear you can be on exactly how you're doing that will be great. Yep. As you work through this project. But we haven't talked about noise, and that is a concern. I know some of the, I'm probably going to misrepresent this, but some of those Bitcoin facilities have been located in areas and they're driving lots of noise. Part of it has to do with the cooling system. So people legitimately are going, okay, what kind of neighbor is this facility going to be to the adjoining property owners?
Yeah, no. Great question, and appreciate the question. Noise is a legitimate concern that we are working to address. So, you know, there's a big difference between a Bitcoin mine and a data center. A Bitcoin mine, they're constructed cheaply and put up quickly, frankly. And a data center is a fully enclosed building. You know, we've got 5,000 acres for the data center campus that we will be utilizing for some buildings. And with that 5,000 acres, we have the opportunity to make sure there's appropriate setbacks so the noise levels going off the property are not significant. So we are aware of the concern and trying to address the noise as we do this project. We will be doing noise studies and making sure the setbacks are appropriate to make sure we address that concern.
Now, as you do the noise studies, would that information be available to the public so they could understand exactly what you've learned about that? And I may be putting you on the spot, but that's okay. If you're going to do a study on noise, I might like to know what that study says.
Yeah, I don't see why we wouldn't make that stuff available, Steve. So we're still doing the design and the noise studies, but once that information is available, we can share that. You know, there's frustration out there on this project that we don't have all the answers today. And we talked a little bit before that we're still in the design phase.
Absolutely.
We haven't started construction. Yep. On this project yet, and we're looking to start construction sometime in 2027. So we've got a bit more work to do from a design and engineering standpoint before we can answer specifically some of these questions that folks want answers to, rightfully so, but we're just not there yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely understand. I've had experience in large-scale projects like this, and it takes time to define the scope, define the construction plan, et cetera, et cetera. So Charlie, I really appreciate the fact that you guys are willing to have conversations about the concerns that people might have. It's good to hear about those now. Mm-hmm. Before the design is in the books, as it were. So the fact that you're joining us today and the fact that you have open communication, I think that's really valuable. That will educate your process and then continue to talk to people throughout the project so they understand. There's a little bit of, I just think this is a lack of understanding on some people's part. Maybe there's some legitimacy to this, but you guys executed a letter of intent with Northwestern Energy. And I know this because I worked in the business world for many years. When you are working out a business deal, there's proprietary information in those deals, and you want to be really guarded and careful about that proprietary information. But people have used this letter of intent as, oh my gosh, they're keeping all these secrets. What can you say about the letter of intent? I read something the other day that I want to share with you about maybe there's an approach to provide good information out there about what the terms of contracts might look like in a general sense without being overly specific and just having that letter of intent out in front. How would you respond to that? People automatically assume the worst, right? I think that's kind of how we're wired. I'm not putting that on anybody. I do that myself too. So we go, oh, they're not showing us that. So there must be something mysterious that they're not talking to us about. Please address that.
Sure. Happy to, Steve. Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. In a business transaction, as you negotiate things, there are things that need to remain confidential. So we're still in discussions with Northwestern and customer on how this is going to look and what this is going to be. So that information needs to remain confidential as the discussions progress, and we'll, you know, eventually be able to release that data. You talked about the large load tariff, right?
Right. Yep.
I mean, at some point, this is going to go in front of the Public Service Commission, which will then, this information will be public for folks to understand and to ask questions on and those sorts of things. But until we get to that point, we're just not able to release that today, because there's a competition out there for data centers, right? There's several others announced in the state, and a transaction between us and Northwestern may be different than another customer, and we need to keep that information private at this point in time.
Okay, understand. Thank you, Charlie. And as those things go forward, to the extent you can, the more information, the better. Otherwise, people just make up their own conclusions. And that's what you see happening, not just in your project, but in a lot of areas, in a political context, in a community context. We fill in the gaps with whatever information we might hear or read, and it may not be factual. So that letter of intent is a tool you're using for negotiation. I absolutely understand that. When the terms are settled, to the extent it involves the Northwestern Energy, then that information becomes subject to the discussion they'll have with the Public Service Commission, I understand that correctly.
That's right. And I'll reiterate the point again. We are committed to paying our own way. So while we can't disclose the details of the letter of intent at this point in time, we are committed to making sure that residential customers are not impacted by our project.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate that commitment. And we're going to continue to ask you about that, and so we appreciate it. We talked about rates, we talked about water, noise, all these other things that we have concerns about. This will add significant new tax base to Yellowstone County, correct?
Yes.
Any sense of what that looks like?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, again, as I mentioned, we don't have the final design of the project, so we don't exactly know what the footprint is going to be. There are some independent studies out there that look at kind of cost per megawatt on a data center build, and those run anywhere from probably $8 to $15 million a megawatt for a construction of a data center. So if you extrapolate that to our 1,000-megawatt proposed data center campus, you can see that it's a significant tax base that this could generate for the county and the state. Not to mention, along with the data center, right, we talked about the generation that we're building as well. So there will be that tax revenue associated with the generation to support the project as well. So it would be significant, Steve, tens of billions of dollars.
So as Montanans, we're actually talking about data centers. We're also talking, we have a lot of conversation about property taxes, and we're trying to encourage our legislators to make changes that don't impact us, but maybe impact somebody else. Frankly, one of the ways to lower our property tax burden is to encourage new private investment that spreads out that tax base. That's a topic for another show, but it's really important that we think of this in that bigger picture context. New private investment in Montana adds to the tax base, more taxpayers participating in the responsibilities to fund the services that we all use every day. Again, we can have another show on that, Cody, on Montana property tax. And there's a lot of things that moving. Hey, when we come back, we're going to take a break. There's this whole China thing. Now, I'm not good on conspiracy theories, so I'm really cautious about this. I mean, I don't just jump at the information that's tossed out there. But is there a China factor going on here in the data center development world? What does that look like? What should we know and understand about that? Well, we're getting close to wrapping up Voices of Montana today, but I do want to talk a little bit more with Charlie. Charlie Baker is here with the Big Sky, a digital infrastructure project. Charlie, thank you for joining us today on Voices of Montana. I appreciate that. I kind of teased out this whole China thing. There's been a lot of conversation with China. We just had the president out there, and I'm not sure how people feel about the results of that. But what's this whole theory about China trying to undermine data center development in the U.S.? Is that just conspiracy? And I'm not expecting you to be an expert on that, but is that something we should think about?
Look, I think, Steve, I think you've seen some reports recently that experts in the field have come out and said China is funneling and supporting opposition to data centers in the U.S. So I'm not an expert in the security of the country, and I'll leave that to the folks in D.C. But, I mean, it is a bit of a race with China against building these data centers and getting these AI models to grow. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case, but I'll have to leave that to the experts to comment on.
That's a good answer, because I've done a little bit of reading on it. I saw some online, and I thought, I'm not sure how to respond to this. And we should be, this is just Steve, but we should be concerned, and I'm just going to use the term suspect, about what China's up to. And we need to be. We need to be very guarded about that. And so I don't know what the context is in data center development world, but that is a concern that I would share more generally, much broader than just what we're talking about today. Charlie, let's get grounded back on this project. Talk about project timeline. What are the next steps for your project? And then opportunities for the public to continue to get questions answered and have input.
Yeah, thanks for that, Steve. So project timeline, I touched a little bit on it earlier. I mean, we're still negotiating with a potential customer for the data center site itself. So those negotiations are ongoing. You know, it's not unusual for these things to take time. We talked about this as a significant business transaction. So, you know, I don't think we feel like we're where we need to be in that process. So I think, you know, we continue those discussions. We'll get a customer soon, and then we'll finalize the design, and we're anticipating starting construction sometime in 2027. This is going to be a phased project. It's going to take multiple years to build the data center campus as well as the generation to support that. So you could see one building coming online and then a year or two later another building coming online, but we anticipate starting construction in 2027. So yeah, to your second point on how we can continue to update the community, as things progress and as we get final designs, as we get final water needs and those sorts of things, we'll be trying to communicate that as much as we can. We have a website, which we have Big Sky Digital Infrastructure, which we post frequently asked questions on. Folks can go there and review those, and we'll continue to update this as the project progresses. So we'll look to opportunities to inform the community through various town halls or what have you as we get more details as well, Steve.
So people can go to BigSkyDigitalInfrastructure.com?
Yeah,
I
don't know if that's the exact URL, but if you search Big Sky Digital Infrastructure, it should come up.
Okay, perfect. If you want more information, that's certainly a source of information. And then I'm assuming on that website there's a way, if they have questions, they can feed those questions to you.
Yes, is. There is a form on there where folks can contact us, and we'll respond to those emails. So,
all right. Well, I want you to take your corporate hat off for a second. And we're talking as two Montanans, okay? The Montana native, I know you absolutely care about Montana's economy and Montana's quality of life. What do you see with that, with just your Montana hat on? And you went to the University of Montana, so we're not going to get into that debate. How would you quantify the opportunity Montana has with this project?
You know, look, the data centers are being built all across the country, and this is a big project and a big opportunity for the state of Montana. So if it's done right and done responsibly, it will bring significant jobs to the state, it will bring significant tax base to the state, and it will provide opportunities for our kids to work and stay in Montana rather than leave the state and have to find a good paying job somewhere else. So I think there's a lot of opportunities that this can bring to the state of Montana.
Charlie Baker, thank you for joining us on Voices of Montana. I'm Steve Arviscow. It's been my pleasure to be your guest host. And so join us again tomorrow on Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.